The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, a very good morning. It's 4 minutes past nine on this Tuesday, the 16th of January, 2024. And you're very welcome to the 9 till noon show, broadcasting live across the region on air and across the world from the northwest of Ireland online. It's great to have you on board, and we want your views and your comments, your stories into us right now. Our phone lines are open for you. WhatsApps and texts to 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000. If you're outside the Republic, it's 00353 86 60 25000, and you can give us a call in 07491 25000 with that same international dialing code if you're outside the Republic. Emails from across the world to comments@highlandradio.com, and of course you can comment on our social media. If you choose to watch the show, that option is there for you. We are on YouTube, so you can watch us on your smart TV or your Fire Stick. Highland Radio Ireland is the URL there, or the name of the channel. We're across your mobile devices on that app, as well as Facebook, Highland Hub, Highland Radio News and Sport, and broadcasting live on X. Okay, the newspapers from the regions this morning. It's just one this morning. It's the Donegal Democrat. And there's been a warm welcome by Donegal Municipal District Councillors to the news that work is to commence on January 22nd on what will be an upgraded Diamond Central Civic Space area for Donegal Town. The announcement was made at this week's monthly meeting of the MD in Donegal Town, where it was also revealed that 97 buses a day pick up and drop passengers off at the bus stop located outside the Abbey Hotel, and that did not include tourist buses which arrive in the summer and at other times of the year. So just give that figure again, 97 buses a day, and that doesn't include summer buses as well. At a previous meeting on analysis of the number of users and their specific timeframes for utilising the bus parking facilities outside the hotel was given, it was said that discussions had commenced with a local landowner who's developing a site some 400 metres from the existing bus stop, which may help resolve the congestion. I would argue there isn't really bus stopping facilities there at all. Yes, they can pull in outside the Abbey Hotel, but there's not facilities or spaces. And that's not questioning the reporting in the paper, by the way. It's just they're only reporting how it was described to them. The Irish Times this morning, Gardaí are examining a warning that the hotel at the centre of a standoff over accommodation for asylum seekers could be burned. Some 17 international protection applicants entered Racket Hall Hotel yesterday amid scuffles between Gardaí and prosecutors, which saw one person arrested. Yesterday, Fianna Fáil TD for Tipperary, Jackie Cahill, told RTE that he'd reported to the Garda a warning that has been made to him that the hotel would be burned down. Now, I've seen myself four threats of the same calibre. He said it was a very isolated incident, but that you only have to have one person to have an arson attack. You don't have to have everyone agreeing with it. A full investigation of the matter has not been launched. In response to queries, a spokesperson for the Garda said that while it does not comment on specific conversations with third parties, the force can confirm information was received and it was now being assessed. So there's a huge controversy outside that facility in North Tipperary. People have protested overnight. And what we're seeing is more and more of these protests taking place. It was very clear that a decision was made that these people were going into that hotel, which is the last hotel in that town in which it's located. They were going in by hook or by crook because there was a large guard presence there. Not really nice to see the young children. Now, people will say it's the guard's fault. People will say it's the protesters' fault. Everyone's entitled to their own opinion, but sad to see the younger ones having to see that as they went in. And as I say, some of you will blame the guards, some of you will blame the protesters, but still, they did have to see it. Some good news yesterday, carrying it in the papers today, about your electricity costs going down. Gas and electricity prices may fall by 15% amid a return to normality. Households can expect more energy price cuts this year after Electric Ireland announced a second reduction in its tariffs in the past few months. Consumers could be in line for another 10 to 15% decrease in electric and gas prices, according to energy scientist Paul Dean. He said this would bring the cost of electricity for a typical household down to around £1,500 a year. This is in contrast to the cost last year of around 2,000 per household. 2,000 sounds about right. Very, very expensive. However, before Russia invaded Ukraine, the annual cost of electricity for a year was around 1,100 euro. Asked about the latest announcement by Electric Ireland that it was cutting electricity prices and the standing charge by 8% in March, Dr. Dean said this is the start of a return to normality for electricity prices. But there's an awful lot going on around the world that could see an uptick again very, very quickly, I'm sure. On to the mail this morning. Disabled people do not want to be pawns in the assisted dying debate, advocates say, as they also warn against arguments around new legislation in this area sparking commentary with eugenic overtones about who's worthy of support to live. The Independent Living Movement Ireland organisation will today warn politicians that disabled people do not want to be political football in the debate around assisted dying in Ireland. The Special Oireachtas Committee on Assisted Dying will reconvene this afternoon after the winter recess to begin its final weeks of debate around assisted dying legislation and whether it should be introduced in this country. And what are your views on that? We have discussed it here and there in the past, but we're getting to the point now whereby, you know, decisions may actually be made on a national level as to whether or not it can be introduced here or not. And, you know, the conversation is going on all the time. I mean, there's a storyline, I believe, in Coronation Street, is it, at the moment, about someone who has been diagnosed with MND. I believe it's MND. And they're teasing out the conversation about assisted dying. So, as I say, you know, normally the soaps follow what's being talked about because to try and stay relevant, I suppose. But anyway, my point being is do you believe that assisted dying should be introduced into this country? If you do, why? If you don't, why? What are your concerns? Peter Kearns of the ILMI will say the Oireachtas prioritising a committee on assisting people to die as opposed to a committee examining how to improve services to allow disabled people to live in dignity is a worrying development, which is a really, really good point, actually. And a little later on in the programme, I'm going to mention it to you now. We're going to be carrying a story, and it's really quite a worrying development, but we can't access the speaker until after 11. But we can have the conversation between now and then, because Donegal's only child and adolescent counselling service is having to close, which is really quite shocking and has triggered a great deal of upset amongst people who have used the service. And a lot of people have used the service. 15,000 people have accessed counselling. These are children and adolescents. They've accessed these services provided by the Raphoe Dyson Centre. They have a centre in Letterkenny, which was very useful for people in Letterkenny. But what also was excellent about this service, and I say it in the past tense, I hope this can be reversed, because they only need 60 grand to keep going, right? Now, I don't understand how this can be allowed to happen. There are people with great influence in this county, be it local representatives, councillors, TDs, ministers, government TDs, opposition TDs, that hopefully are going to be all over this to try and get the funding from the HSE in Tusla or wherever it might be, the 60k, to keep this service going. There are 26 odd councillors that are offering supports to people, not just in Letterkenny, but also Dunfanaghy, Stranola, Creasla, Buncrana, local community funded projects at Huey's Corner in Carndonagh, and Gemesis Legacy of Hope in Dunlow. So right across the county, with the exception of the south of the county, but be that as it may, we're going to be discussing this on the programme later. Have you used the Raphoe Dyson Centre services? What do you think of the news that for the sake of 60,000 euro, these services are being fully withdrawn now, being closed down? And I think if that's allowed to happen, all the connections with the people that work there, the councillors and all, what, it'll be very hard perhaps to reconstitute that if someone changes their mind into the future about funding it. We have a mental health crisis. We have an awful situation with pressures on our young people and our adolescents. We know how hard it can be for them to get support and counselling, and we have the only dedicated service for that that is on the brink of closure. They've announced the closure effectively. They told their staff. Can it be reversed? Well, we'll speak to the head of it a little later on. But I just hope that those that might have influence in this county will see this as an emergency and also realise the positivity that could come from a really small financial announcement and get on this today and get it sorted and get this reversed, get them funded. We'll be talking about it later, but we want to hear your views as well. Are you upset at the news that this service might be closing? Maybe you've had young people in your life, or maybe you were that young person or are that young person that have accessed their services, their counselling services. Let us know why you believe the centre should not be allowed to close. An interesting development in the Irish Daily Star, just in terms of, you know, what you can and cannot sue for. Radio DJ Dave Fanning has launched defamation proceedings against a Hong Kong news site and Microsoft over the publication of his picture alongside an article stating an Irish broadcaster had gone on trial for alleged sexual misconduct. The article was published by an online news network entity called BNN of an article on October 11th last, accompanied with Mr. Fanning's image entitled "Prominent Irish Broadcaster Faces Trial Over Alleged Sexual Misconduct." It was written by a person whose name, Kasturi was their first name, Char Kaborty, their second. The defendant, defamatory article, which states that the broadcaster's identity was being withheld due to legal restrictions and that he faces trial for allegedly engaging in sexual activities with a child under 12, was also allegedly republished on Microsoft's news service, MSN, on the same date it had been published by BNN. So he's taking a case in that regard. And Microsoft, I'm sure, through their news network, just pulled it automatically from the offending website. There's a good call. I think a lot of you would back this. I think it's a bit late in the day because I wonder now if the government might be inclined to do this, because there's been a big uptake of 0.0 alcohol. But the government should slash taxes on non-alcoholic beers and wines to boost the spirits of people taking part in Dry January, a former minister claims. This is in The Sun. Fine Gael's Charlie Flanagan is taking part in the trend that sees people give up booze for a month, but he's raging against the price of non-alcohol beers in our pubs and shops, which cost the same as regular tipples. The Laoise Offaly TD has written to Finance Minister Michael McGrath, urging him to slash the 23% VAT on non-alcohol beers and wines. As I say, I think they make up a decent proportion of sales now, so the government might be against losing out on that revenue, because I think the fight to sort of get them into bars has been won. But we shall see. What do you think? Would you like to see VAT rates on non-alcohol beers cut so that they're cheaper and encourage more people to drink them? And the pubs wouldn't be at a loss because they get the same level of profit. It would be the state that would lose out. And the Irish Daily Mirror, more than 250,000 calls for help were received by the Society of St. Vincent de Paul last year. That's a 10% increase on contacts in 2022. And just over a third of callers were requesting help with food. Close to 30,000 people who sought help from SVP last year were doing so for the first time. Some 20,000 calls relating to those seeking help with energy and utility bills, while another 33,000 were from people struggling with both food and energy costs. And I know many of you out there support St. Vincent de Paul and the work that they do, and we are pleased to be able to platform them whenever they need to speak publicly. And I'm sure the money that you raised was well spent in helping those people who called seeking assistance there. Marie joins me on the programme now. How are you?
I'm fine, Greg, and yourself?
I'm okay. We had Minister for the Environment, Eamon Ryan, in here last Friday. I had an awful lot to get through. I didn't get to talk to him about one of the traditions in this part of the world and elsewhere, and it's not just a tradition. For some, it's the only way to heat the house, and that is turf cutting. And you'd even though he says, look, we're not going to stop the tradition of turf cutting, we just don't want people selling it and what have you, you wouldn't be convinced for the future of over the future of turf cutting, would you?
Well, I'm not sure about that, but I'm just saying for a lot of people, this is our tradition. And in my house, that's all I use is turf. I have a range. It heats all the water through the house. I do my cooking, my baking, everything. And it's so economical compared to having to be buying oil and gas and all that stuff. So I don't think it's I don't think it's good for Eamon Ryan to be coming around here, especially to Donegal, and telling us what to do. And I'm thinking that they just give us another 3 years for the turf cutting, but I'm going to continue to cut turf every year to supply my house with heating and everything else. And Eamon Ryan, he comes to our county, but he doesn't care about anyone. And I'm just saying that because he seems to be chipping away all the time of our tradition.
And what about the environmental argument to it, though, that it's a dirty fuel?
Yes, no, it's not. It's not a fossil fuel. The turf cutting is not a fossil fuel. The oil is worse than the turf. And Eamon Ryan doesn't think about other things that I don't believe it's an environment thing at all, honestly. Mm. I don't believe that. They're just pushing all this out on top of us to stop us from doing whatever our traditions and everything is.
He was given a bag of turf, wasn't he, during his visit to Lifford by Councillor Michael McClafferty. He's not happy. Do you support Michael McClafferty in the point that he was trying to make? He said that older people in Donegal who do not have home fitted for oil and depend on turf being cut locally to heat their homes, he says that needs to be retained. And that's pretty much exactly what you are, that person. Yeah. You rely solely on turf.
Yes. And it's not just me. It's a lot of people especially out through the countryside.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's all right in towns and cities where they can't get turf, or they have to just do with whatever they get.
If they stuck to the situation whereby you can cut your own turf, but you can't sell turf, right? Would you be happy enough with that?
No, not at all. I believe there are a lot of elderly people in their homes, and they can't go out to cut turf, but that's what they're relying on too. And they need to buy turf. They have to buy turf. And they are people supplying people, you know, people like this with turf, which is great. You know, it's whatever the choices that people want.
Yeah, and I don't want to sound cynical, but there are people out there that believe that this was deferred last year until after the next election. You know what I mean? Because you don't want to be peeing off the people of rural Ireland and taking the turf from them running up to election, and that whilst it has been deferred, that very soon after the next election, they might crack on with plans to stop you using your turf, Marie.
Yes, but I wonder then, how am I going to heat my house? I could not afford that if it was oil or whatever else. And that's what I am. That's what I have is turf, and that's all. It's so economical for everything. Like, look what it's doing for me, my house.
One of the buzzwords with the climate crisis and what people need to do is just transition. So it wouldn't be a just transition, because you'd be left high and dry if you couldn't burn turf. How could you retrofit your home? How could you change how, you know, water is heated? You'd have to put it, where would you get you'd have to get another cooker, another oven or what have you, Marie. You know, so that wouldn't be a just transition. If you'd be taking your way of life from you and burdening you with a massive debt to change the way you operate your life.
Yes, and our electricity bills, look how high they are as well. And Greg, I believe, see all this climate change. I think that is to cover other things up. I do not believe in climate change. Look what China is doing. China they're making everything. Plastics, everything goes to China, and China is selling to the whole world. So governments or anything, or Europe or any of these, are not saying anything to China. Why is that?
Well, China are building coal mines. Coal burning. But is that an argument that climate change is a thing? That, you know, you're burning turf and heating your home, Marie, probably not having that great of an impact. But then you have a nation the size of China, which, as I say, is doubling down on coal to some extent. They're cutting down the rainforest. But we are seeing extremes of weather, though, Marie. Do you not think that there's something that man is doing has to be influencing? Since industrialization, the world has changed dramatically. Areas flooding that never flooded before, you know, heat that people can't tolerate and they're having to move from certain areas of the world. Do you not think that is a thing, even if maybe the cause, you might say, well, it's not you burning turf. Do you not think there is a thing that the atmosphere is changing and it's making life very difficult for people in different parts of the world? We're lucky here. Our climate is just what it is and probably will stay the way it is for quite some time. But there are extremes of weather elsewhere in the world, Marie.
Yeah, I know, but no, I'm not fully on this climate change thing very little.
That's your view,
because I think Eamon Ryan and all is just trying to chip everything away from us and our history and everything, and it's just not right. So, I don't know. If Eamon Ryan came around to my house, I'd have a nice scone of bread on the table. I would have my house heated. But I don't know what he's doing. Sure, he's flying jets and flying planes here and there. So he's doing a lot of travelling himself.
Yeah, but he said last Friday you can't blame the individual, you see. But then I can't blame you for burning turf, Marie. If we can't get down to blaming the individual, then I can't blame you for heating your house with turf.
No, yeah, that's true.
Do you not find it very messy? It's a messy enough fuel, though, isn't it? A lot of ashes, Marie. Do you not find? And you must spend the whole day you must be like feeding a steam train. You must be constantly just throwing turf into the stove all day.
Not really. I just put the turf in, close up the range, and if I'm cooking, I open it up. And that's what I do.
All right, lovely, it works for you. Okay, it sounds like a lovely way that you live, Marie, to be honest with you. I'm not saying you're off the grid, but you're very self-sufficient. Okay, listen, we heard you. Thank you very much for your time this morning.
Okay,
have a lovely day, Marie. Take care. Okay, Marie is not going to stop cutting her turf. Let's see what some of you others think. Greg, I'll cut turf and sell turf as long as I can. Eamon Ryan or nobody else will stop me. And I can't understand why Eamon got over Lifford Bridge. Well, there's everyone's different views, and some are moderate. They might disagree with him, but they wouldn't necessarily say don't come to Donegal. I totally agree with Marie. My granny and granddad only use turf as well and really don't like using coal or oil. Indeed, the smell's lovely too, I personally believe. Greg, I agree with this lady, Marie, 100%. Another caller says, pity you didn't ask Eamon Ryan about the big diesel chargers they're having charging all the buses. Just another scam by the government. I know what you're talking about, and then you sort of get into the fact that if you're on about electric cars as well, like, you know, an electric car, if someone forgets to charge and they break down, you get they tow a generator and they charge it, and that's crazy and it's ridiculous. I don't think picking little obvious flaws in arguments for or against is going to change anything at this point, because people have their views and it's going to take something bigger to change them. I see a lot of people that would say, look, electric cars, fantastic. If you're going to talk about the environment, though, they should only be run on electricity generated on the green, you know, like wind and what have you, wind and solar. And there's an irony to charging them with coal-generated electricity and so on. So, but you could get into that argument and never get out. Good morning, Greg. I, for one, would agree with assisted dying. If there's something wrong with you and you're not going to get better, it's your body, and I think you should be allowed to make that decision if you want to end the pain. Okay. In my opinion, once you start taking morphine or it's been administered, then you're assisting death, and that's because of the sensitive nature of it. That's a point that I've sort of tried to make on this program before, that to some extent there can be some level of that situation. But what we're talking about, you know, and I've spoken to someone who works with people in assisted dying in Belgium. Like, we're talking people who are diagnosed a year or two of disease of conditions, and they're like 38, and I mean, are showing the signs of their condition, but are still walking around and could work and all that type of stuff. And they're saying, you know what, I don't want to go through this. I'm ending my life. I think we often think of it, people who might be, and I don't mean this insensitively, you know, writhing in agony at the end of their life anyway, but assisted dying in other countries permits people, once they are diagnosed with a terminal illness or life-limiting illness, that they can just do it then and there, within reason. Do you know what I mean? So it's not just right at the end of life. We're talking here where it can happen much earlier in other countries. Hi, Greg. Would it be possible for you to read the Garda Oath, what the Garda Oath is, so we can understand their behaviour in Ross Cree yesterday? I understand where you're coming from. And I'm familiar with the Garda Oath as well, and how it can be argued in both ways. Government keeps talking about communication with the public, but if they don't convince the public with waffle, they send it in an army of Gardaí. That's the government style. I think the horse has bolted in terms of trying to articulate what they're doing. I think that's long past. I mean, we were talking about communication on Friday panels 2 years ago, about communicating with the public about what's happening. And now they're still talking about doing. I think that horse has bolted. I think really it's policy change is the only thing that is an articulating what that change might be and how it might improve the situation is the only thing that might benefit them at this point. But I'm open to correction on that as well. Of course, that's just my reading of it. Donegal has no services for children as we are, and now we're taking the only one there is. I demand to know where all the money in this country is going. It's no wonder people are feeling so much anger towards our government at the minute. €60,000, I believe. That's the figure, Caroline, is it? That would have retained or kept those services going, at least for now. It is a decision that has to be reversed. Funding has to be made available. And I hope it's not too late for that to happen. But as I say, there are people with influence either listening to this programme or told that we're going to be talking about it that surely can intervene at an early stage. If this is dissolved, getting all of those people back together would be very difficult, I would imagine. Again, I'm open to correction on that, but that's my gut feeling at the moment. Right, Margaret joins us now. Hiya, Margaret.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. How are you keeping, Margaret?
Whether it's good or not. Weather-wise, it mightn't be so good, but...
Well, the funny thing with our county, Margaret, it's like 6 degrees in the south and it's zero elsewhere, and up a hill it's freezing and down a hill it's raining. It's a crazy old county we live in. But what's your point? And it kind of is connected into the weather, Margaret.
Yeah, it's my point. I drove my grandchildren to the bus this morning. They're both attending two separate secondary schools in town here. And I was giving out about the coats. I said, have you no better coat than that wee skimpy thing? They said, oh, that's a school coat and that's all we're allowed to wear. And I said, well, surely on a day like this you would be allowed. Oh, no, they say that this has to be worn. This is the school coat and that's it, nothing else. But I don't know if that is policy or not, or does it bother anybody else. But on a morning like this, with frost, snow, rain, wind, everything, I mean, like, and the way I look at it, if a child is not dry and comfortable starting off their school day in the morning, how are they going to have a positive day in school? You know, I was just listening to Lee this morning. He was explaining all the layers that he had on him.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Well, he's wearing this. Well, he's grand.
That's he's an old man, Margaret. That could be his age.
No, that doesn't matter. I can feel the cold too.
What age are your grandchildren ish? Like, are they single digits or teenagers?
13, 14.
You see, I wonder, are they spinning you a line like I get spun by my young fella who would never put a coat on? I don't know if it's about being cool or whatever, and I don't mean cool in the temperature sense, because even driving to work, you see lots of younger ones on the side of the road with no jacket on at all. I don't think it's school policy, Margaret. I just wonder, is it a fashion thing?
No, I'm well aware of this coat business. It has always been an issue when my own kids were at school about the coat, and then they brought in the school coats. And so I don't know if it's a case of, and I would like to know if they are able to wear a heavy coat, yeah, you know, just for these weather conditions, or if that's, you know, like standing out getting wet in the morning and cold all day, it doesn't make sense. So I would just like to know if that is the position or not.
Okay, so the question is clear as this, Margaret, is are schools dictating to children what actual coats they can wear into schools really effectively? And if they are, well, that's a problem. Are you saying there's a designated school jacket, a light jacket, that the children, yes, are being told they must wear rather,
yes,
than their...
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Right, that's definitely, you know, something
they're
worth looking at.
Jackets. I know they're fashionable, but fashion and weather just don't match. And there's loads of acceptable winter coats available in town.
But
now,
come here, going back to when your children were younger, Margaret, and I'm just wondering if it's the same with me. Did you not have the battle in the morning to get them to put a coat on, even when it was terribly cold weather? Because I've had that, oh, I don't need to wear it, the school's warm. And I concluded that it must be because wearing a coat is not cool. Did you have that issue with your young
well,
ones, Margaret?
There always was an issue. I don't like, you know, there has to be, they would like to wear what they want to wear, but when the school jackets came out, I thought, well, that's good. Mm. At least they're wearing a jacket. But it's just specifically, they are fashionable and the school jackets are grand.
Okay.
But on a wet day, on a cold day like this, they should be able to wear a heavy coat. That's all I'm just saying.
Okay, so we want to know if any schools out there are precluding children from wearing their own heavy jackets and what have you. Margaret, listen, lovely to chat to you. Hopefully you're nice and nice and warm wherever you are, and we appreciate your time today.
Well, I'll get around now saying, Granny, what are you chatting about?
But
good morning.
They don't know who you are. All right, good morning to you. Take care. Bye-bye. Okay, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio. And we were talking about turf a little earlier on, and someone decided to send a picture of their turf stove in to us. So if you're watching the show, there it is. What do you think about that? It looks cosy. And they even sent a bucket of turf, two buckets of turf they've got in. So they're well sorted for the day. It does look cosy. Hopefully, whatever you do, you have us on in the background anyway. Right. OK. We are joined on the programme now by Adele Doherty, PRO of Mountain Rescue Ireland. Good morning to you. Thank you so much for joining us.
No problem, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing good. Right, okay. So we are seeing a consistent, if not increased, level of mountain rescues. And maybe our beautiful landscape, it's sort of becoming a victim of its own success, if that makes any sense at all. Because those seeking that perfect Instagram picture or that TikTok are finding themselves getting caught out, which means that you get called out.
Yeah, well, it's kind of the case that we get called out for all sorts of people. So it can be the person who's very new into hill walking and maybe they've only gone a short distance, or we can also be called out to very experienced mountaineering people that have, you know, very experienced. It's just the case that slips and falls and accidents can happen at any time. So we really respond to anyone really that needs our help. So we don't really judge people. We kind of like the idea that everyone's using the outdoors more and kind of using what's on their own doorstep, or maybe traveling to different parts of the country. So in a way, I think it's just great that people are out and about more often in a way in our own hills.
Yeah, Donegal has seen an increase in call-outs in the last fortnight. There's been 5 call-outs. Not getting into specifics because we don't want to embarrass anyone, but generally speaking, I presume there are quite a number of call-outs to those who haven't planned correctly, haven't checked the weather, don't necessarily know the terrain, don't have the right gear on. Is that the kind of problems that we're seeing, Adele?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. So it can be a flip of a coin. Sometimes you can still be very prepared. And if you break an ankle, there's no way you're walking yourself off that hill anyway, and you're going to have to call us for help, or if you get lost, possibly. But you're right in that a lot of our call-outs, a lot of them could be prevented if people just take a little bit more time to make sure that, you know, the weather's okay for them, they're heading out at the right time of day, they've the right boots with them, they have the right clothing. So you might start on a sunny day at the bottom of Muckish, and by the time you get to the top, it could be hailstones, and you're thinking, well, I should have brought that coat that was in the car, or I should have brought those wet pants or a warm layer, whatever the case might be. So it's just about trying to be prepared as much as you can for what the day might bring when you go out in the hills.
And if you're not used to it and don't have the right gear, it's not something really you can do spontaneously, because you do need, you know, a good pair of boots with proper ankle support. You don't want to be going up there in your favourite runners that you walk or jog in, because that's not good enough for you. You need, you know, a decent jacket, light but well insulated and all, that will, you know, protect you if the temperature drops. And as you say, the weather can change really, really quite quickly. You know, you can't do this stuff, I don't think, on a whim, unless you already have the right gear at your disposal.
Yeah, it's kind of the case that even for ourselves, if we head out in the hill on kind of a whim, if we say, you know what, it's a nice day, I have the day off, let's go to the hills, you're still checking your bag before you go, you're checking the weather, you're making sure you're not waiting to too late in the day before you start, because there's nothing worse than coming down a hill when it's getting dark, because you start to kind of panic and you start to rush, and that's when things can kind of go a little bit wrong for you. So it's just about kind of being organized and sensible and making sure if you're heading out in a group that everyone in the group is going to be comfortable with what you're doing, because sometimes you'll find friends that will come along but then realize halfway that they're like, you know, I'm feeling the pressure here a little bit, but I don't want to say anything, and they'll push on. And it's just, you know, you don't want people tired and hungry and cold and wet up on a hill.
And our mountain rescue teams are absolutely fantastic. But, you know, they want to be there. They want the calls. They want to get people down safe where possible. But unnecessary call-outs are really what we're trying to avoid here, aren't you? These are people that often are, you know, in full-time employment, have other things to do. You know, so it's the unnecessary call-outs here that we're talking about.
Yeah, and something else that can play a lot sometimes is having a properly charged phone. So people will generally head off with their phone charged, and they may, you know, take some videos, take some photos, maybe FaceTime someone from the top. They might be using an app on their phone for their mapping and getting their direction of travel, which is great. There's no problem with that. But you just need to be prepared for what happens if your phone battery starts to drop, because it can be affected by the cold weather. And it's something that a lot of people don't really think about. But when you call for mountain rescue, so if something happens to you and you call, regardless of maybe how close to the road you are or anything like that, it can still take a couple of hours for a mountain rescue team to get to you, just with the nature of the time it takes to get to the mountain. They have to hike up the mountain after you. They might have to take up equipment. People think the helicopter might always come in and rescue them, but if the weather's bad and they're busy elsewhere, it may not be an option either. So I think people are always generally shocked when we talk about how long it can be from when we get the call to when we actually will get to that person to be able to help them. So it's about making sure you have kind of your phone charged for all of that time. Because the last thing you want is your phone to go dead while you're waiting on mountain rescue to find you.
Yeah, exactly. And the battery can drain very, very quickly. If you're taking pictures and videos all the way up the mountain, you can find yourself ill-resourced with power when you get there. Battery packs, things like that, very useful, I'd imagine.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, having one in your bag, a few Ziploc bags or kind of dry bags to keep things dry is also very helpful. Even just for your own jacket, if you have a spare jacket in your bag, keeping it inside another plastic bag will keep it safe from getting wet if you're out in the rain as well, which can help.
Yeah, all right, okay. It's a solid advice. And if you're chasing that picture for the gram, just make sure that you know what you're at, isn't that it?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. And if ever in doubt, I mean, this can happen to anyone in any situation. You can call Mountain Rescue, so you just call 999 or 112, ask for the Gardaí, and then when you're put through to them, just ask for Mountain Rescue, and then the system will kind of start from there.
Yeah, and also, I'm not sure if you mentioned it too, though, but even letting people know, because sometimes cars can be found in car parks, and it's not quite clear, you know, there's no note been left or no information been left. People don't know how long the car's been there or what the people might be doing. So it's a little bit like kayaking. You know, you wouldn't just leave your kayak lying on the shore because, you know, someone might think
yes.
You fell out of it. Common sense stuff that would help the emergency services, you know, at a time of a need.
Yes, and something that can really help there is leaving kind of your plan with another person. So leaving where you're going, maybe what route you're going to take, what time you expect to be back at. And at least then if, say, a call does come in that someone finds a car, they may search the reg of that car. The Gardaí can look that up and contact, you know, the home address. And they can say, well, actually, they're gone out overnight camping and we're sure they're totally fine. If they're not back by 9 a.m. tomorrow, like they said, then we'll think about maybe seeing if they need help. But you can do little things like that just to be organised as well.
A lot of it is common sense. Okay, Adele, thank you very much for your time. That's Adele Doherty, PRO of Mountain Rescue Ireland, 086 60 25,000. Nice and busy on the phone lines today. Thank you very much for that. Has Turf Cutting Lady ever studied science? I don't think so, but lack of consultation and listening to the people by government is the root of the problem, same as the migrant crisis. It's the big industries that are causing a lot of our problems with climate change. Go after the wee man, tax them to the hilt. Leave Mr. Big Company alone to do what they want, says a listener. Burn timber instead of turf. Timber is a renewable source, says a listener. Eamon Ryan hasn't got a clue about anything. All you need to do is just look at him. He doesn't strike me as someone who's in the present. Just look at Varadkar using a private plane when the government plane was available. I think it's about time this government was kicked out, believes the listener. Eamon Ryan's a funny character in that he's derided here in this country and gets an awful lot of shtick. But internationally, he's incredibly highly respected. You know, I'm sure you might be well aware of that. But he is, you know, he's got some really big positions on certain boards and bodies and what have you across Europe and the world. He's very highly thought of outside of Ireland. Climate change is a hoax, says the listener. Just makes plenty of money for the elite. Fair play to that lady that says it as it is. Good on that lady. I'll be doing the same, cutting turf, as I have no other way of heating the house. Okay, keep them coming into us. The CSO, the Central Statistics Office, has launched a campaign to raise awareness of its new household budget survey, where households will be asked to track their spending over a 14-day period. Gerard Doolan is head of social data collection with the CSO, and he's with us on the programme now. Good morning to you, Gerard.
Good morning, Greg. Thanks for having me on the show.
I'm good. Right. Now, what's the... No, it's our pleasure. What's the initiative here? Is 14 days enough, do you think, actually, by the way, to do an effective track of people's household spending?
Yeah, so I suppose the household budget survey was previously carried out once every 5 years, and the CSO has now moved to a continuous or continual collection of the data. The 14-day spending notebook that you mentioned there, Greg, that's a tried and trusted method that financial advisors and, I suppose, people who are struggling financially and need guidance and support. One of the first things that financial advisors will ask their clients or the people who come in to see them to do is to track their spending for either a 7 or 14-day period, and that gives that person a sense of where their money is going. It brings an awareness to the individual who's doing the work, and I suppose with that awareness and with that information, they can then make changes in terms of their spending patterns and make savings.
What do you think we might learn from this, particularly given the fact that it's sort of like a rolling survey now?
So I suppose there's two, I suppose from a CSO perspective, what we're going to be doing is we're going to be getting more timely and more relevant data. So what the data, the detailed expenditure that's collected in the household budget survey, we use that to make up the basket of goods that measures CPI, which is, of course, the measure of inflation. So inflation over the last 18, 24 months, it's very, very, I suppose, topical. People are all aware of it. We can all see prices rising in shops and all the things that we buy. So the CSO is going to get better quality data for our users, which will inform policymakers. From a participant and from a household perspective, they're going to get a spending awareness in terms of where the money is going. I'm sure we've all been in a situation where come a Friday, we open our wallet and we say, geez, I'd 50 euros there at the start of the week. Where's that gone? I suppose we know when we speak to previous participants in the survey, we kind of do testimonials and we see how we can improve on things. Some of the information that we get from people is they get that awareness, they get that understanding. And an awful lot of the time, I suppose, with the best will of intentions, we all try to make the most of our money and spend it sensibly. But you'd be surprised, I suppose, if in terms of, let's say, buying that cup of coffee every morning, buying the newspaper, buying an ice cream, buying a sandwich or a lunch out, etc. It can all add up. And I suppose it is certainly from the information that we've gotten back from respondents, it's that awareness and that knowledge, and it informs them to make the decisions, as I spoke about earlier, and make the changes in their spending.
Yeah, and I mean, you've a balance to strike here, aren't you? Because you want as many people to use it as is possible, and for it to be as easy to use as possible. But you also need it to be thorough. You know, you don't want things missed out. I mean, it's important that the data is accurate.
Absolutely. So I spoke there earlier about a basket of goods for the consumer price index. So the data that's collected in the household budget survey, it's not sufficient that we know that you spend 100 euros on your grocery shopping in one of the supermarkets. We need to know what that 100 euros is broken down by. So it'll include everything from your meat, your fruit, your vegetables, your breads, your utility bills, your children's activities, gym memberships, your cup of coffee in a newspaper on a Sunday morning, your ice cream on a sunny day. It includes every single item of expenditure for those 14 days. Now, we'll be sampling 6,000 households right around the country, and those 6,000 households are representative of all of the 1.8 million households. So I suppose some people might think 6,000 households is a big sample, others might think it's small. We have a team of about 150 interviewers all around the country, and they will knock on the doors of more than 60,000 households and asking them to participate in household surveys. So the household budget survey, which we're launching this week, it's not the only survey that they collect. They also collect things like the labour force survey, surveying income and living conditions. I suppose we don't often knock on your door, because there is 1.8 million households that we can draw a sample from. So if we do knock on your door, it's important, I suppose, that people take the opportunity to participate. The CSO is a trusted provider of statistics. We've been doing this for 75 years. A lot of our surveys are not compulsory, and I think they don't need to be compulsory because people recognize the CSO, they know the brand, they know what we stand for. When people supply information to us, and they do supply very sensitive, confidential information, and in the household budget survey, it's financial information they're providing, we anonymize it. It cannot be traced back to an individual. It's used for statistical purposes only. We don't share it with anyone. And I suppose a big thing for us is that we are totally reliant on participants in our survey. We need them to give us the data. Mm-hmm. And in return, they can count on us to provide independent, impartial statistics to inform everybody.
So how do you select those taking part, or do people volunteer to take part, or is it a mixture of both?
No, there's no volunteering take part. So what we do is we have a register from of households, and we will draw a sample from that. So as I said, there's 1.8 million households, but we need to pick a sample of 6,000 households spread all over the country. And as I said, each of those households is representative of the different household types. So when I speak about household types, you can have obviously lots of different household types. You might have a single person household, you might have a retired couple, you might have a single parent household, you might have a household with two adults, two children. So if your household is selected, you're probably representing a similar type household of maybe, let's say, 500 or 600 different households all around the country. So that way then we know that if we can collect the sample of 6,000 households, that's representative of the typical spending patterns all over the country.
Radio listenership figures or surveys, but it's a high sample rate. So it will be very, very reflective of the reality of the people in the country. Okay, Jared, we look forward to digesting those figures whenever they become available. We do appreciate your time. Thank you for that. That's Jared Doolan, Head of Social Data Collection with the CSO. 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number. Or you can give us a call too, of course, on 074 91 25,000. Coming up after 10, we have Community Garda information, where we have the latest appeals and information from An Garda Síochána here in Donegal. First, your assistance in that item does help to solve crime and prevent crime. So make sure to listen in. Make sure to have an input if you can. Right, back after these.